In just a moment, our guest teacher will be coming in. If you're not already familiar, his name is Karuna Caton, and we've had a treat so far this weekend. He's been running a weekend workshop on the misleading mind based on his book of the same name. And he told us a bit about his biography. He's been studying Buddhism for over 25 years. He first encountered our lineage lamas, Lama Zopa Rinpoche and Lama Yeshe at Kopan Monastery back in its earliest days, and ever since then has been an integral part of our organization. So we're very lucky to have him. When he comes in, if this is your first time here, we'll do what are called prostrations, and those are something that if you're not familiar with and you're not comfortable with, you're not expected to do. But we do actually those still all stand out of respect for the teachings. And the prayers that we say this morning will be in the prayer books that are tucked in the back of your seat, or if you're in pews, they're at the end of the pews, and you can just pass them down for everyone to share. Thank you. So we'll start on the first bay sheet in your prayer book, and we'll do Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times, and the four immeasurables in both English and Tibetan. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta Maha Munaye Soha Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Sem chen tam che de wadang de we gyudang den. While the children are still here, we'll say both Chenrezig and Green Tara mantras, which are on the bottom of the first pink sheet. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om. Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. 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 And so now the children can go to their classes.
See you guys. See you later.
I'd like to move up closer. There's also plenty of seats now to the front, so feel free to get up and come closer if you'd like to.
People are afraid. Yeah. Been nice if the kids stayed too, huh? So good morning. And thank you for coming. See if I can keep you awake. And I didn't really prepare. Well, I did prepare. I think the way to prepare is, for me, is to think about things and then actually in the end just to try to develop some feeling, right? Practice. So I thought about, I had a few ideas that might be useful. And I also thought that if we get a chance, I'd like sort of prefer if we can have exchange, if that works for you, okay? Because it's, you know, anyway, a dialogue is more interesting than, if I was here and having to give a teaching, right, then I could choose a topic and I'd go through the outlines and the topic, you know, all the ideas and then present. But I think what's might be more helpful is to talk about what it is we're trying to do. Again, I have to ask, are there people here that have never been here before? Oh, good. I've never been here either. So, just from Friday, right? Or Wednesday. So maybe the four or five of us should go out somewhere and they can meditate. I don't know what people's experience is, so excuse me if I'm presumptuous in certain ways because I have no idea what your backgrounds are. But I can talk about my background or my relationship with these ideas. And I think that as I've been leading a workshop, and so some of the people know that I have certain biases or strong ideas about what we're doing in this Buddhist path, this Buddhist ideas. And I think one of my firmest values or ideas is people that really to communicate the idea of what Buddhist thought is about. So, of course, some people, they don't need to hear this again or they didn't even hear it to begin with, but I really am concerned that Buddhism is misunderstood as it's being developed and evolved in, well, let's just say America rather than the West. So if we start with fundamentally what Buddhism is, you know, what does it mean? We've talked about it. So why do we even use a Sanskrit word? I saw that question. No one's ever answered that, by the way. Why do we use the word Buddhist? You know, in Tibetan, they don't say Buddhist. They have a Tibetan word. Anyone who's Buddhist can answer that. So let's go fundamentally what Buddha or Buddhist means. Buddhist is someone who practices, I guess it's someone who practices or adheres to Buddhism, right? So what is Buddhism? If we go to, I used to teach English. That was the way I stayed in Nepal. It was really a ruse. It wasn't because I had a love of teaching languages, because I had to figure out a way to stretch a master's program into 10 years. So you couldn't get visas. It's difficult to get visas for more than 3 months. So I had a few tricks. And so I did after I was in Nepal originally for a year and a half as a student, I went back for another 10 or 11 years. And so the way I stayed was I found a really helpful university that was willing to have had an independent master's degree program. So I had this master's degree program in teaching English as a second language. That's because I was teaching English as a second language to the monks at the monastery. So that's my kind of, that's part of my story. And if we go back to what Buddhism then means, you know, so you go to Nepal or India or even come into the Kadampa Center and you see all these prayer flags and you see these banners and you see these tankas and you see statues. It's a little bit overwhelming for someone who's never been here, you know. And that's not, I hope it's not being recorded, right? That's not Buddhism. That's what I was going to say. That doesn't determine as a Buddhist or not. You can come in here, and you can be coming here for 10 years, still maybe it's not determined we're Buddhist or not. Why? So what is it to be Buddhist? So the Sanskrit word Buddhist comes from, I think we would translate it into English as Buddhist, is someone, Buddhism is the path of awakening. Okay? So if we think about awakening, that's a very strange way of looking at things. I mean, if we look at other religion systems of thought, they don't talk about awakening, right? Maybe they talk about, what do they talk about? Being born again. Why? Huh? Why would you, so for what's the goal? Well, I guess that's the goal. Yeah.
We're going to pass around the microphone now that it's available.
Uh-huh.
So we're used to this.
Oh, good. Great.
So we're going to start sending it around. Okay. As you make comments. Please pass it on.
So born again, someone else says something? Huh? No, but what is the goal of all these different paths?
Redemption.
Redemption. Wow. What does redemption mean?
Renunciation.
What about philosophy? What's the goal in philosophy?
Understanding.
Understanding. That's a good one. So what does it mean about awakening? It's a really unique term. So awakening, as we discussed the other day, awakening then implies that we're asleep. And so about coming into this Gompa and seeing all these things may not have anything to do with awakening. So if we're Buddhist, I think we're concerned with awakening, right? And that's a pretty intense concept in the sense that if we're awakening, it means we're not awakened, right? If we're practicing the path to awakening, it implies that we're not awakened. And in Buddhist thought, of course, the Buddha, when he attained awakening, he realized that he couldn't express these ideas to anybody. It was just, they're unexpressible. Who would get it? It's a little bit like, imagine at night when you're dreaming, and then someone's standing by your bed and they know you're dreaming, but you're in your dream thinking it's real, right? Being chased by someone. I had a dream of Geshe-la last night. That was really interesting. And I think he set me up, by the way. I don't know why he had me teach today. I don't know why, but, so you're missing out on him. So I'm going to try and, those are too big of shoes to fill. Anyway, to, think about what we do. So if we're interested in this path, whether we've been doing it 35 years or not at all, 3 minutes, to not lose the idea that if what we're doing is not fostering or evolving that sense of awakening, then we're not practicing. Okay? Now, to know whether what we're doing is awakening or not awakening is a different question, right? This class at Geshe-la, I think, has been teaching the last several weeks, has been on thought transformation, right? Okay. I won't go there right yet, but I will go to the place, what it means to be a... What does it mean to be a student then? So if we're a student or if we're Buddhist... If we're Buddhist, then we say we're a student. I think Buddhist and student probably are synonyms, okay? So if you don't call yourself a Buddhist, that's okay. If you're a student of awakening, then you're a Buddhist. Okay? If you're a Buddhist and not a student of awakening, you're not a Buddhist. Most of the time, I'm not a Buddhist, I'll be honest with you, okay? Even I can do all those practices and read this stuff. So like right now. Right now, this is a good example. So right now, are we practicing or not? Can we say as a group whether we are or not? No, we can't. Sorry. We can only say as individuals, right? What's your attitude right now? What's my attitude? Okay, so this is how I prepared this morning. I thought, okay, I need to try and have the right attitude. So there's only in this context, there's only two attitudes. The attitude that's focused on awakening and the attitude that's focused on being asleep. So what if we're in the attitude or a frame of mind of awakening? That doesn't take coming into this gompa. That doesn't take sitting on your cushion in the morning. That doesn't take... I mean, those are all practices. It's like we talk about training for a marathon. Okay, you go to the gym because it's raining outside and you can't go run and train, right? So you might go to the gym. But if you go to the gym, does it really mean you're practicing for the marathon? Even though you might mean to, you go and you have a cup of coffee or something. Do you have coffee at the gyms? I don't go. Actually, some do, don't they? I belonged to one a long time ago and it had coffee. I think that's all I did. I went there and had coffee. So the intensity around or the focus on how much time or attention we spend on awakening determines the level of our practice and, of course, the results. So you can do anything. In fact, you could do probably anything, and it could be a path of awakening. Okay? Now, someone's going to come up to you later and says, well, what about if you're a butcher and you're killing all these animals? You know, that's not a... Actually, it could be, I guess. Nothing's fixed. I mean, it'd be easier not to do that, probably. Oh, my Buddhist friends, what do you think? Could you be a butcher and be practicing the path of awakening? Motivation to help others, and frame of mind. Yeah. I'm not encouraging people to do that. It'd be tough. It's tough, but yeah. It's relative, right? There's no absolute, this is Buddhism, and no absolute, this is the path. It's all context related. It's all relative, right? So I think the people who, I wanted to say something because it's just not a digression, but I really want to emphasize that if we're going to try to become awakened, if we're interested, and I think almost every human is interested in becoming awakened. Why? Why do I say that? Happiness. Yeah. So it's a formula, right? I mean, I just jumped. It's like in math, who has formulas? Algebra has formulas, right? And I jumped from mathematics to algebra just then. But the point is that it's actually the only purpose to practice anything is to become happy. So we come down to the foundation. I think we lose the purpose. So if this Buddhist philosophy says that the reason we're not happy is because we're asleep. So therefore, the way to be happy is to be awake. And the good news is that we don't have to. It's not being asleep and awake. Okay, let's. If you still have that idea, it's not exactly like that. It's between asleep and awakening. If we're just awakening, it's good enough because we will continue to awaken. It's like once you know it's a dream, you can't really. Oh, it's like when you go see David Copperfield, right? Delusions. It's like, don't ever go on to Google and look at how he does that stuff. Because you can never get rid of that out of your mind. Once you go, you know how he makes the train disappear. Okay? But it's like once you're a little awakened, you can't unawaken. That's the good news. I mean, you can kind of a little, like, you might want to go to and say, well, I'm not enjoying David Copperfield because now I know the answer. So I'm going to force myself not to remember how he does this. You could do that. It doesn't last very long. Okay, so when we have with our kids and with our partners and with our work and when we're driving, at home, if we're sick, if we're well, all these things, we have a choice. Whether we're just in reactive mode, which means kind of victims, right? Or we can do something different. And that's about making the life meaningful, which is just about... Okay, so here we are sitting together. We have a choice right now whether this is an opportunity to awaken or to further our awakening, which is our understanding, our wisdom, right? Or not. If not, it's usually, then we're probably not realizing we have a choice or we forgot. So everyone remember right now you have a choice. Those who know that you have a choice. So what would it be to turn this... So this is what Geshe was teaching in terms of thought transformation, I think. Thought transformation is right here. It's not about when I meet my enemy, I'm going to see, I'm going to be patient, whatever. All the, I mean, some of you might not know what I'm talking about, but for those who do about thought transformation, it's not. It's good to motivate for the future, of course. It's like rehearsal. But why should we rehearse for the future right now when we're all together? Why not just practice thought transformation now? So what would it be? So thought meaning why not exercise a choice to awaken, use this moment to awaken. There's no other moment, by the way, right? I mean, the future is just a conception. Right? And the past is just a conception. And then the present is hard to find because it's non-conceptual. It's direct experience. Once we conceive, by the way, just for those Buddhist psychologists, once we have a conception, it's past, right? Do we ever have a direct experience? Was I getting close? Do we ever have a do we ever have a direct perception of something? Yeah. Robbie, do we?
Yes.
Yeah. Do we have an awareness of a direct perception?
Most of us, no.
Right. Tricky. He's good, isn't he?
He's
right, right. So, which is actually the whole point of being asleep. You know, another way of talking about being asleep is I think right now I'm having a direct experience of all you guys and myself. There is a direct experience there, but it's not actually in my field of awareness. What am I actually experiencing? Mm-hmm. My thoughts about you, my conceptions, my emotions, all that mental stuff. Call that mental stuff. It'd be great if I was just in my direct experience, right? So now that, if we don't know that, that means we're asleep. Okay? Because what happens is every time I constantly respond to my conception, which I think is real. If I knew it as conception, right, I would respond. Do you think you'd respond differently? That, I think so. It'd be like it'd be a little bit like being in a dream when you recognize it as a dream. So it's not that it's not real. It's not that it's not real, meaning it's not that it's not there. It is there, but it's not there the way we see it. So I am seeing all of you as really there. I'm not seeing all of you as merely conception. Am I? Well, you don't know what I'm seeing, but I can tell you. So how about anyone out there? Is anyone out there? Well, no, you wouldn't say if you were. Yeah, is anyone out there not experiencing this from conception? Did anyone ever think about, heard, is this like the first time you're hearing this? Because it's quite amazing. Yeah, kind of. So even if we heard it, why do we still do it? Old habits die hard. So, when we talk about being Buddhist now, we're talking about practicing, right? Training. Because like now, any of you, if this is your first time here, never heard anything about Buddhism, now you have no excuse. It's like that. You've heard it, you can't unknow it. You know, David Copperfield really does this. He has mirrors and stuff. Now you know. What are you going to do? You can't unknow this. It's a curse, by the way. You know what I mean? I'm leaning in the loosest sense of the word. Do people know what that means? Like, do you feel it's kind of a curse sometimes to know this stuff?
You can't be lazy.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of responsibility,
and it gets kind of heavy. We get kind of, oh my God, right? So, that's the problem with knowing too much but not enough. We know, well, in my case, I know too much, but I don't experience enough. Because all of these ideas, and this is the other thing I want people to walk out of here with, all the ideas that you might study, read, if you follow any of these traditional or non-traditional Buddhist ideas, if they're not changing your life, going from asleep to awaken, then you're doing it for something else. You're perpetuating, maybe, the asleep state. Now, there is a thing about imprints, and we leave imprints, so they may be beneficial for that. But I just want to impress upon people that anything you or I read, all these prayers, all of that, if we can't make a connection between how those ideas transform our minds from asleep to awakening, then maybe study something else. Okay, come back to it later. Or if you say, okay, I don't understand, I'll just get the imprints, that's okay too. But just for entertainment, you know, just to kind of boost your ego because you know more than somebody else, you're not practicing Buddhism, and you're not even studying Buddhism, really. Okay? So remember, Buddha is about awakening. So if what you're doing is not awakening, then what we're doing is not practicing. Okay. We said habits. So the habits, this is the problem, right? Okay. So that's why it takes training. That's why you can't wish to have the muscles to run a marathon, right? Why even to do this? So I remember that it's really important because someone said born again and redemption. So it's important just to awaken. It's like, well, what's so good with that, right? That might be a question.
What's
so good about awakening? What's so good about that? Excuse me?
To experience right away.
Because she doesn't have the microphone. So that to develop awareness, to experience right away, I think you said? Okay. So my mother has Alzheimer's. And so pretty advanced. So I hang around her and I want to be aware and experience it right away. What's so good about that? Will I? Who said control? Yeah. That's an implication, right? That's an assumption. Is it right? Actually, I agree with you. Well, let's put it different. Maybe we can turn it around. Not being aware, what does that do?
Causes suffering.
Yeah, it's being in reaction, right? And it causes suffering. Now we have to define suffering. Thank you. that's also a very important term. So suffering, what does suffering mean?
Aren't happy.
What does happy mean? That's maybe a better one. Not suffering. You have a negative state of mind. Okay, let's go a little further. What's a negative state of mind? Okay. Dissatisfaction. Discontent, dissatisfaction. Is that how they describe it in psychology? I don't know. I don't know. Well, it's not generally. Maybe some psychologists. So, having a
negative state
of mind. What's a negative state? What's a negative state? Negative set state. I'm just reporting so they can. Negative states of mind will produce more negative states in mind. Yeah. Well, let's look at what a negative state is, though, because is going to the fair a negative state? Okay. Outside of this room, everyone is going to go over to the fair and take a little poll of people and say, "Are you in a negative state of mind?" What's going to be the answer?
Maybe not right now.
Well,
co-workers even, a whole band of them went to the fair for the intent to have fun, knowing that they were going to be in misery after they went to the fair.
Because they were going to drink too much?
Well, they're eat too much.
Eat too much.
All the things, and they knew
this is really important. Thank you. In case you didn't hear, and so I can just repeat because it's being recorded. Yeah, why don't you just repeat what you said. This is important.
Now the
battery's dead. Oh. Okay. What he said was that he had friends who went to the fair, probably in a pretty good mood, but knew they were going to. It would lead to a negative experience, right? They get too full, too much food, or too much drink. They didn't drink, so too much food. But they could, you know, people go and drink. And then, okay. So the question is this: this is where we become wiser. So. What I like about Buddhist thought, what I like about it is it's not so much about, okay, this is happy, I'm going to generate that so much. I know people, we do that. What I like, it's just my bias. What I like about Buddhist approach is that wisdom makes you happy. I haven't seen that in any other system of thought. Wisdom makes you happy because... if we talk that we're asleep, we haven't even said what that asleep state is, if it's even existing. But the antidote to sleep is awake, and the synonym for awake is wisdom. Wisdom means what? So let's be really clear what we're talking about. Because often we hear about wisdom of emptiness and wisdom of, you know, shunyata, things like that. And I'm not sure, you know, what there's a mental image that comes up. So that mental image is not it, right? That's a mental image. Concept. So we're going to talk concepts for a second, but it's very simple. Wisdom is understanding reality. Simple. That's all it is. Okay? The implication being we don't see reality. So remember when Robbie was talking about concepts and like that? That's what we see. Actually, most of our world is in reaction. Most of our perceptions are in reaction. Most of our perceptions are filmed, you know, screened by conception. And not even most, all of them. We do have that direct perception. We do have it, but we don't recognize it. We don't live in that place, okay? Unfortunately. Okay? So wisdom would, if we have wisdom, then we see that. We see that dynamic. Perceive, I'm not talking about perceive, not just intellectually. So it's good to start intellectually. We have to know first, what's the problem? Okay, so now, going to the fair and you poll people and say, is this a negative state of mind? And I don't know his name.
Vincent
said, yeah, well, it's because when they finished, they felt full and kind of nauseous from too much cotton candy or whatever you eat over there. What do you eat in North Carolina? Twinkies? Fried Twinkies? Oh, my God. I feel sick now. I feel negative now. Okay, negative. So now let's go a little further. With wisdom, okay, so Vincent, listen. With wisdom, so that was good that they had some idea that they, at the end of the fair they would feel negative. But in Buddhist, just in wisdom, forget about Buddhist, in wisdom, before they went to the fair, when they're at the fair and at the end of the fair, would be viewed all as negative. Negative what? Like negative thing to do? No. It's all taken up by this misunderstanding of reality. Okay? So therefore, it's negative. So the idea of negative mind has quite a broad use. Of course, a non-negative mind would be a mind of compassion or generosity or patience or non-harming. There are, you know, relatively not negative. Relatively non. But, you know, it's not very easy to be in those places, is it? We don't even know that there are, a lot of us don't even know that those are even good minds, positive minds. I mean, it's like, why is patience a positive mind? You said it before. Why is patience a positive mind? Mm-hmm. So you know, you've studied, you learned, you contemplated that anger is a negative mind for you. I'm gathering. Okay. So if we don't know what a negative mind is, we won't know what a positive mind is. Why is anger a negative mind?
Because
disturbing. Okay, so now it's, so listen, so mental health, which I think is a synonym for awakening, okay, so that we're on the same, we can mix these terms around. Mental health begins to understand, well, what's the opposite of mental health? Mental disease is understanding that the problem is eternal, internal, not eternal. Internal. So the problem is internal. This is also a very different way. So if we talk about a path of awakening, then the implication has to turn that what has to awaken? It's an internal thing. So whether we're Buddhist or not, you want to talk about Buddhist, then we'd say you're a spiritual person, right? And we've talked about in the workshop we've been doing about what is a spiritual person. Okay, my definition of a spiritual person is someone who is developing his or her inner potential. Because they, and then I'll add some things onto it, that inner potential is vast, right? Unlimited maybe. And it's a source of happiness. So I think what a Buddhist really is someone who knows that the source of happiness is internal. That's all. So if whether I'm doing something as a Buddhist practice or not, we really have to analyze and look, is it developing that internal quality? Which means, is it accessing or developing that inner potential? Now, it's true that I might not be able to tell at this moment whether it is. So I can motivate that it does. Right? Because let's say we do Tara Mantra, right? We could do it completely as an internal practice. That'd be best. But if you don't kind of get it, or, you know, you're feeling really thick that day, you know, you just, you know, whatever mood you're in, then you can kind of motivate it that, okay, because if you motivate, intend it, or direct it, it's like you might be in medical school and you might not like all your classes. You might be sick one day when you go to class. But it's all directed towards getting that medical degree, right? So in the same way, you might be not very clear about how doing Tara Mantra has anything to do with developing internal quality, internal potential. It might, right? So it's kind of like this. We don't want just blind faith, but sometimes we don't have wisdom. I think blind faith is not particularly useful, by the way, right? Sometimes we do things out of faith. We do a lot of things out of faith. But reasoned faith is okay. So the reasoned faith is, well, Tara Mantra, that seems pretty kind of out. I mean, that seems really distant, right? But then you start thinking, well, I know that sound has a particular vibration, and the different vibrations have different effects on the brain, right? So maybe this kind of subtle sound could have a positive effect. Okay, I'll try it. Like that. You know, some faith involved, because someone should explain to you. Right. Someone should explain to you, Robbie. I mean, it's like prayer. Robbie should explain to you all the prayers, okay? And how they have an internal impact. Okay? So that's why I just wanted to get out about practices. So if we're going to be practitioners, we are going to focus on developing those internal qualities, okay? And it doesn't matter if you call yourself Buddhist. That really doesn't matter. But there are some people say, well, I remember spiritual Buddhist, spiritual person might be the same thing, sort of synonyms. So, you know, people say, yeah, I'm into spirituality. I'm a spiritual person, right? And you say, oh, what do you do? Well, I'm an astrologer, right? And I do yoga. And I'm into astral travel, you know. I'm a spiritual person. You can't judge whether those are spiritual or not. Okay, you can do astrology, and if it's developing your internal qualities, then you'd be spiritual. If you do astrology because you're interested in, I don't know, predicting or describing how you are, then maybe that's not spiritual. Okay, I remember that many, many years ago, it's probably about 1990s, something like that. And I went to His Holiness Dalai Lama was giving teachings in Los Angeles, and I'm from that side of the country. And remember that the 3 days were the teachings on the awakening mind, which is called bodhicitta. And he talked for 3 days. In the last hour or so, he took questions. And he was answering these questions, fielding, you know, it was kind of a pretty dynamic time. And one question was, how can we attain, what's the quickest way to attain enlightenment? I thought, great question. Okay. You know, because the bodhicitta attitude, right, is the attitude that looks and really wants, is concerned and actually acting for the benefit of others, awakening. Okay, just for if people don't know. So it's this mind, it's this mental state that's different than ours, mine. So anyway, so that's a good question, right? And His Holiness like showed the aspect of being upset. And he said, you Westerners or Americans, whatever he said, all you're concerned is quick. Everything has to be quick. Give me a pill, turn on the TV quickly, make me happy now. So now here you want enlightenment. What's the quickest way to enlightenment? He took it completely. I almost want to say, no, that's not what the person meant. But, of course. So then he began to talk. And he said, you know, for myself, I've become more comfortable with taking my time. And then he told a story of Milarepa, who was a great Buddhist, Tibetan Buddhist saint, right? Who was not a monk. He was a lay practitioner. He killed 30 people before he started practicing Buddhism and then actually attained enlightenment in that life despite having done all those bad things. Okay, so that's the moral of the story. So he's talking about Milarepa and one of his chief disciples, students, was Gompopa. And Gompopa spent many years with Milarepa learning, you know, amongst other students, learning all the teachings and practices that Milarepa had mastered and was actually, you know, becoming his heir, one of his heirs to the teachings. And so finally, one evening, Milarepa said to Gompopa, he says, okay, I think you're done. Now you need to go out and teach on your own. And Gompopa had like, okay, I guess I have to do that. And so next day or two, Milarepa says, okay, so when you leave tomorrow, I'll walk you part of the way. And it's sort of I think it was a traditional sign of respect that, you know, the teacher was going to walk him and set him on the path because probably wasn't going to see him again. So they start walking down the trail. They go for about a couple hours and they come to a bridge. And they come to a bridge and there's a hill on the other side of the bridge. And so Milarepa stops and says, okay, here's where you go on alone. All right? And so Gompopa, they say their goodbyes, and then Gompopa starts walking across the bridge and starts going up the hill the other side, and he just starts having a panic attack, right? I think it's a panic attack. Because all of a sudden he freaked out and said, oh, wait a minute. Maybe there's something I missed. Maybe there's some teaching I missed. Did I get it all? So he turns around, and he can see Milarepa off in the distance. He shouts to him. You know, he shouts and says, hey, master, master, wait, wait. So Milarepa turns around. And Milarepa, for those who don't know, he lived up in these caves up in the mountains in the Himalayas, and all he had was, he didn't collect any, all he wore was a very thin, torn piece of cloth. And he was like really old, you know, and ragged. And then to eat, he didn't worry about food, so he often just collected nettles and boiled them. So His Holiness is getting to this part of the story, and he's crying, like just crying. It's as if he's there. He's trying to tell a story, and there's long gaps, and he's, you know, he's rubbing his eyes. And he can see the whole scene unfolding before him. And then Gompopa shouts out, you know, with this panic, what did I forget? What didn't you give me? Did you give me everything? And Miller says, yeah, 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 don't worry. I told you it all. You know, you got all the teachings. And then Gompopa says, yeah, 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 but what was the one most important one? So at that point, Milarepa turned around his back. He turned his back to Gompopa, and he lifted up his skirt and showed all these boils and scars on his butt and his legs. And he said, "This is my most important teaching: practice." And he walked off. So I think Gompopa probably knew what he meant. And I think that we should know what he means. I think then we think about thought transformation, all this stuff. Why do all this stuff? Why even confront the negative mind? Why? Okay, now we said in the early part to be happy. Now I'm going to qualify it. I'll say maybe that's not quite right. Or maybe it is right. So when we say be happy, who is it that's going to be happy? Not here. Who is it that's going to be happy? Who is it that we're working on? Ourselves. So we're going to be happy. Okay, but we say, I want to be happy. Who's the object? Who is the self? Our internal self, right. So here's the problem. The problem is, we have to analyze everything. It's a problem. So we can't just go, I want to be happy and then, go along our merry way, because at some point, walking down the road and we become like Gompopa and says, what's the main teaching? At some point, you walk down the road and go, wait. I want to be happy. It's important to know who the subject is. And the subject is difficult. This is where Geshe-la, that's why he's teaching thought transformation, because he's figured that out. So we say, I want to be happy. And the problem is, if we look and try and discover what that I is, it's very slippery. So how do we move forward? So even Shangha said about the negative mind. Why is negative mind a problem? Who is it a problem for? Yeah. And we could be romantic and say it's a problem for my family, and people might think that it's generally not. I generally don't think of others. I generally think of myself, unfortunately. Okay. So the goal, the work is to really understand how that I, whether that I is an issue or not. So we're going to go, okay, I want to be happy. And we might spend our whole life trying to practice even Buddhism, because that's the path for me to be happy. But what if you never really think about the subject, I? Because maybe it's not possible, right? What if we spend our whole life and doing this thing and it's like, oh, it's a big trick? It's not possible. Right? Could happen, right? Yeah, it gets kind of depressing, actually. You benefit along the way. Yeah. But what if you want, what is it you really want? You want short-term benefit? Not you personally. Us. What do we really want? To be happy. So what if we spend all this time trying to be happy with something that kind of can't be happy? Wouldn't it be good to know now? The people are new. You're lucky. us older people are in trouble. We're just finding out. Okay. So that I, we have to be careful. I mean, the point is we have to be very, very, very careful. I don't know what you're like. I know what I'm like. Sometimes when I'm practicing, I'm thinking, I might have a mental argument with somebody, right? And I think, oh no, I can't think like that. I'm not a mental argument, maybe I have an argument. I can't think like that. Even I'm not, this has really disturbed my mind. This is really negative. Okay? So mental health is having an undisturbed mind. I agree. Okay, so having an undisturbed, so actually, since everyone's at different levels, yes, it can be okay to benefit this level and then benefit this level and then go to benefit this level and then benefit. But the ultimate benefit is we have to somehow figure out that I. Okay, that's the ultimately we got to figure that out. But for sure, it's better to not be angry than to be angry. Why? disturbs my mind and it disturbs the minds of others. So I'm not saying reject those practices. I'm not saying that. I'm just trying to help. You know, I have 1 hour, right? I got to get it all out. So the one, so the point is, let's get to the point where what's the whole path? So the beginning of the path we started in whatever time we started, which is about being happy and that the source of happiness is internal. Okay, we're good on that. Okay, then we went a little further. It's okay. Well, internally, what has to happen? Well, I made an assumption, and I'll just say it clearly. We need to subdue those negative emotions because they disturb the mind the most. Okay, we're going to go back up the ladder a second and remind everyone what we're looking for at this level is an undisturbed mind. Okay, it doesn't mean a lobotomy. It doesn't mean, you know, taking antidepressants so you have no mood swings. It doesn't mean that. It's where we really do have to, although, by the way, depending on where you are on the ladder, you might have to take antidepressants. Right? Because if you're coming from here and you're trying to get to here, you know, you're subduing the mind slowly. Subduing the mind is not right. You're subduing the negative emotions, the things that disturb. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Good point. Right. I know, it gets tiring, doesn't it? Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. So what's your question? I agree with you. Is that a problem, first of all?
I think it is.
Yeah. Okay. So, actually, that helped me a lot, your question. That internal dialogue, actually, in a way, never stops.
Right.
You know, it just becomes sometimes quieter. We don't know that. I think it's extremely powerful to, now, with this approach, you now look at that internal dialogue not as the subject anymore. It's the object. Because what happens is, you know, why didn't Richard make me an omelet this morning? I think he should have made me an omelet this morning. I don't know. I mean, we're going home. I don't know. Geez, is he going to stop for food or not? Is he going to stop for sandwich or not? Is he going to starve me again? Right? Like that. And what that means is that, okay, this is really good. So that is, what do we call that? No, don't answer. I want to answer that. We call that reality. And it's not reality, right? That's right. All day long, all night, we're going, you know, Rich, he's a nice guy, but he doesn't buy much food, doesn't have much food in the house. You know, we have this dialogue. And I have that dialogue about you right now, by the way. I have a dialogue about everyone in this room right now, by the way. I also have that dialogue about myself. It's always going on, that dialogue. So the split here is, you know when someone says, you know Lori, she's really, isn't she irritating? And you go, yeah, she's irritating. Same thing. It's just dialogue. But when someone says that to me, I don't, right? If you're like me, it's not dialogue. Lori is irritating. Guys, you know Robbie, guy's great director, isn't he? Good teacher. It's dialogue. Sorry, Robbie. Doesn't mean, you know, we think that's how Robbie exists. Just as an example, okay? We think that's how Robbie exists. We're fooled. We're tricked. That's that unawakened thing, okay? So maybe unawakened is not the right way of putting it. Maybe tricked, fooled, hallucinating. Lama Yeshe used to say we're hallucinating. Okay, so going back, and so your point is, the more we can key in to that dialogue, then I will ask you, as your internal practice, you know, when you talk about Buddhism, I will ask you, now that voice, okay, so my voice says, you know, Robbie is such a sweet guy, isn't he? That voice is not so disturbing in my mind. It's mistaken. This is very important. It's mistaken, but it's helpful. Lori, you know Lori's so irritating. Yeah, I know she's irritating. God, I just hope she doesn't come by today. That's irritating. It's that voice upsets my equilibrium, right? More. It's mistaken too. Both are mistaken. One's helpful, one's not helpful. How to determine helpful, not helpful? right now at our level, what disturbs and what doesn't disturb. Okay? So what now your meditation is, as you become an internal being, a spiritual person, you're not, you know, your attempt, you know, there's a big project, but your attempt is, I know all those voices, all that dialogue is not true. It's mistaken. So I'm going to pay attention to it, and because I see it as merely created, isn't it? It's merely constructed, isn't it? You know what? Aware. Yeah, someone said aware, remember? So now you're going to, because the awareness is this. The lack of awareness is that dialogue is the subject. It's me. The awareness is that dialogue is an object. It's not who I am. Now what is it? You know, then we can spend a lot of time studying. This is where the study, why we get into Buddhist psychology. What it is, it's an affliction. It's a negative mind. It's part of your mind, right? But it's, excuse me? Yeah, but we're going to make it conscious. It is unconscious. We're making it conscious. So that's such a good way of thinking about it. So that dialogue shifts. As we become more awakened, that dialogue shifts to where it's less about, I really want to go to the fair. Right? Even wanting to go to the fair now becomes a disturbing attitude. So your friends, even that's negative because it's still disturbed. Because now if you're aware of it as being separate from you, of course you're going to have thoughts of going to the fair. Guess what the difference is? You know that word? There's one word that we always use in Buddhist psychology and Buddhism. What is that one thing that's the source of all problems? Attachment. This, I believe, is the real meaning of attachment. The real meaning of attachment is we stick to that dialogue. You know, we get sticky to it. We cling to it. It's a psychological process. Attachment, how I, you know, when I really talk about attachment being a problem, I don't think it means I'm attached to my kids. Okay? Maybe that's a gross form of it. That's really not the problem. The problem is a psychological mechanism that every instant, 60 times at least in that snap of my fingers, we're having a mental experience. And that's broken down to, like Robbie, 86,000, 84,000, 200 times in an instant. You have a mental experience. Each one of those mental experiences has this stickiness. It also doesn't have it. Yeah. Okay, it's like those geckos that stick to the roof. Okay, or that. Anyway, you know what I mean. So, now, we don't have to have that stickiness. But the way we not stick to things is by understanding how they really are. So, let me just, I'll give you a second. So, you know, yesterday, for the people who were at the workshop, we're talking about impermanence, change. That's why change is it's not a problem. That's the problem with change. There is nothing. Right now, you and I, we've been here for 45 minutes or whatever long hour, and it seems like we've had like maybe two changes or maybe not one yet. Do you know what I mean by that? It's like we see things as slides. Right, there's a slideshow. When in fact, it's a film, and not even the film with the little frames. It's like what happens with digital film? There's no frames, is there?
Yeah,
there is still? Just smaller?
Yeah. Ridiculously small.
That might be. So when those frames get down to 86,000 per second, per instant, that's like the mind. Or 200 per instant. Actually, I have 300 now. I was watching, I can't confess these things. Baseball. So watching baseball, and they had this, they show this guy batting, and it broke his bat, and said, "Oh, this is 300 frames per second." I guess that would have been. That's not instant is much faster than a second. But anyway, you get the idea. Okay, so we don't. Where was I? Oh, so each one of those instant, each one of those frames, we stick to. Isn't that amazing? We also don't stick to. We have a bare experience. We do have a raw, bare, prime, main experience. But the things that happen after are in the very next instant, not this instant, the very next mental experience with each of those is all the other stuff. Subtle. We're talking subtle now. Okay? So, this Lori or whoever this person is calls on the phone. Okay? So you hear the phone and you answer and you hear her voice. There's a lot of instances happen there, right? There's a gazillion. Not a gazillion. There's a lot. That whole exchange is maybe 5 or 10 seconds. There's a lot, many, many thousands of those mind instants. Every one of them is bare, which means I just have contact. You know, just a bare experience. I won't go through what happens, but there's five things that happen that are not judgmental. But the judgment comes immediately then. Because what happens? Oh, right? You kind of go, her voice. It's like her voice. Okay? That is the dialogue part. That's the conversation. And because I hear her voice, because of my history and my past, it stimulates some sort of sensation. I don't like that sensation because of my past, my habits. And then I'm reacting that, oh, isn't she irritating? And I say she's irritating, and then this person next to me, because I know that he doesn't like her either. Oh, yeah, that's Lori. Hang up. Right? It's all false. The whole thing is myth. The whole thing is not the whole thing. The whole thing is hallucination. I'm going to say, okay, there's a little part that's not. But we're not relating at that level. I'm not. Yes. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So the problem is the sticky. When I cling, I go, that's really Lori. That's really irritation. She is irritating. That's where the problem starts. Everything else then comes, problems arise. Because then Lori says, hey, can we get together for lunch today? And then what do I do? No, I'm sorry, I'm busy today. You lie. Right? That's how it happens. So all the negative things we do, whether it's lying or stealing or killing or all those things, because we misunderstand the situation. Okay? Yeah.
Yesterday, you talked about neurological pathways and
yeah.
how we get into these grooves of them.
Yeah.
And then shifting and making new grooves.
Yeah.
I think that's about where you left off yesterday. So wouldn't that be creating new dialogue, new
mm-hmm.
internal dialogue? Is that what you're talking about?
What's your name? Yeah.
Janice.
So, Janice. So Janice has a dialogue going about Lori, who she's meeting at the fair after this. She likes Lori, right? I don't like Lori. I have a dialogue that goes, well, should I say something to Janice or not? She really, you know, Lori's going to drive her crazy, right? Right? And then, yes, is the answer to your question. So Janice goes, God, did you know that Lori works with autistic children in the middle of the night? And did you know that when, you know, I was going through hard times, that she came over and cooked for me every day? You know, see? So her experience of Lori is the level of sort of compassion, we call it. That does set up a different dialogue, right? That dialogue sets up a different neural pathway, right? I can have that neural pathway. I can develop that. And that's what we do with mind training, right? Call it meditation, whatever you like. Well, all we're doing in meditation is we're reorganizing our brains and our minds. Not the same thing, by the way. Okay, so that's the answer. So if I'm a good Buddhist, I recognize that my attitude is disturbing my mind. Just even on, okay, let's go selfish for a second. It doesn't work for me either. It doesn't work for Lori, and it doesn't work for me, and it doesn't work for Janice. Because as soon as I say, oh, Lori is irritating, then Janice goes, oh, God, what do I do with that? Do I challenge Karuna? Do I, you know, defend Lori? Or she says, I know she is really irritating. And God, yeah, I didn't realize how irritating she was. And then you go negative, right? And then, So again, going back to what Shankar says, it's like, What disturbs the mind? What does at our level, just right now, begin with what disturbs the mind? What doesn't disturb the mind? And a lot of ideas out there that are supposed to be ideas that make us happy actually disturb the mind. They're not helpful. Okay, so it takes a lot of study, by the way. So I would say the opposite neural pathway, the opposite attitude that will create the opposite neural pathway to my irritation to Lori is going to be, there's a number of them. One would be this one we talked about, is I'm not even seeing Lori for how she really is. I'm just seeing a concept of her. So I'm going to meditate on that. I'm going to develop that idea, that perception. That would make a new neural pathway. The other one would be compassion. You know, feeling, exchanging myself with her. Right? Getting in her shoes. That would make a different neural pathway. And by the way, if I get in her shoes, it's just this weird thing. Compassion, I think compassion we shouldn't be so romantic about. It's a healthy state of mind, period. It works. We can be compassionate and selfish at the same time. Because selfish in the sense that it makes us better. It's a less disturbed mind. Amongst other things. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, you had a question before. Yeah. Yeah. Super glue. Super glue. Yeah.
How does love and attachment work there?
Mm. That's a good question. It comes up a lot, and of course, I don't know if I have an answer for it, right? And just in terms of way. I think that I'll give a couple of different perceptions of that, okay? One is that Marpa, who was the guru of Milarepa, and his son, Dharma Doge, was supposed to be his spiritual heir. And one day, Dharma Doge fell off a horse, and his head cracked open, hit a rock, and was killed. And Marpa cried. He broke down and cried. And his students were like, well, what do you mean? And Marpa was an enlightened being. Okay? And he said, why are you crying? You told us everything's just an illusion. He said, that's right. This is a super illusion. On a relative plane, there's relationship. And you do lose right now. I don't think he was attached. Lam Yeshe, my own teacher, who I mean, we could have just told Lam Yeshe stories, but I didn't want to indulge too much. But when he was, I took care of him when he was ill before he passed away, and one of his gurus, one of his main gurus, passed away during the time when I was caring for him, and another one of my teachers said, "Don't tell him." Okay, so I didn't tell him. Then about 3 or 4 days later, he called me into his room and came in. He had this stern look on his face. He said, "You think you can keep secrets from me?" And he says, "I know my guru died. Why didn't you tell me?" And I said, "Well," and I explained why. And he says, "Of course I would know. But I cried 13 times. But then he wasn't crying anymore. So I think, but we do have to be careful. For our level, love... Love, you know, if you technically speaking, is wanting the happiness of another person. Okay? Okay, it's different than compassion. So if I really love you, right, and we're faced with a situation, I will, you know, I was going to say something mundane like a last piece of cheesecake thing, but even something more profound. You know, that if we're faced with, let's say we have a long ride in a car. That's pretty mundane too. Okay, and there's one seat, you know, that's comfortable and one that's not. It's no issue for me to have, because I really care about your happiness, that it would be a natural instinct. Like a mother, mothers, right? Naturally. They don't think about loving their child. And fathers, too. Excuse me. I'm a father. But what I love my kids, you have to ask them. But you know how it's natural, that natural sense. It's not contrived. For me, you know, love is, I'm working on, you know, I have to work on love and compassion. It means it's not really it. But it's good to rehearse because I got to make those neural pathways because I don't have them, maybe. So the love of a child, it's filled with attachment at our level. It's filled with, it's going to be. Because until we understand the nature of this subject, how this subject, which, you know, I really don't like Lori, that I, doesn't exist the way I think it does. When I understand that, then there can be pure love. But until there's not, we can't have pure love. It's going to be mixed with this misunderstanding. But it's still a positive state of mind. See, you can understand positive, negative. I'm sorry, I got to stop. Positive and negative are relative terms. They're still mistaken. But one's helpful and one's not helpful. Until we, you know, get to a whole, once we are able to understand the non-duality of it, then everything's okay at that point. 11:42. Are you sure this is right? This one? I think it's 5 minutes fast. I didn't even get through the third item on my list. Wait, let me see. There's one last thing. Anyway, practice is chief. That was what I was going to say. Yeah. So many things we could talk about. Thank you very, 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 very much. I just got started. I just found my groove. It's because of your questions. See, I always think the questions are better. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So we'll be saying our dedication prayers, which are on the pink sheet on the back. Or on the...
How long do those take?
Would you like us to do short dedication?
Yeah, sure. No, talk more. No, go ahead.
They're on the first side of the pink sheet.
So everything leaves an imprint. Okay? Remember we talked about the film? That's how we can begin to understand prayers. Okay? Everything leaves an imprint. So our happiness in our hands is in our hands. Make better imprints, get more happy. Okay? So I just want to say, because with the prayers, why we generate all this energy now. We have all these gazillions of imprints, right? So by what dedicating means, which I think is, these are dedication prayers, right? What dedicating means is, let's say we're just having ice cream. That experience comes and goes. It's gone. Except for all the imprints I laid on my conscience when I was eating the ice cream. But the imprints to get the ice cream are gone. So in order, so this time we spent together is just not just gone, but can manifest, it will manifest in the future somehow. Because these are imprints. They don't manifest now. They manifest later. So we can sort of direct them. It's like putting money in the bank and say, this is for the college fund. Okay? It means all these imprints arise, we're all together again sometime in the future, okay, it'll be different. It's like we're always sitting with, as maybe rainbow body beings or something. Or maybe a nicer gomp, I don't know. Okay, so sorry.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll also be reading the prayer list, and Geshe Gelug recommends saying mantras while the prayer list is read, especially Om Mani Padme Hum. So prayers for happy rebirth. All those killed by natural man-made disasters, all the Tibetans who have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom, Nancy York Appen, Mrs. Farrington, Dorinda Hartson, William Hirsch, Claude Holyfield, Mary Honeybrink, Francis Katz, George the Dog, Isabel the Cat, and Sierra the Dog. For job search, Eve Hara, Beth Andrew, Gary Kane, Daniel Cunningham, Harish Varma, Jenny First, Michael Fultz, Kate Harvey, Andrea Johnson, Brian Miller, Catherine Myers, April Rocker, Tony Sloan, Rochelle Thompson, Lori Todd, SS, Anna Dean Silver, and Sarah. For difficulties of body or mind, Venerable Lama Zopa Rinpoche for manifesting a stroke due to our karma, Venerable Chukila, all those harmed by natural and man-made disasters, for the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Clem William Akins III, Denise Allen, Allison Appen, Jim Barnes, Bill Burke, Ron Burroughs and family, Victoria Easterday Clark, Hester Clifford, Rosa Ella Coleman, Allegra Dahlquist, Larry Davis, Jack Doer, Kenny First, Mildred Gooch, Barb and Fred Harris, Davis Helton, Lola Hilliard, William Hirsch's family, Claude Holyfield's family, Mary Honebrink's family, Leslie and Joan Inman, Paul and Kathleen Inman, Kenny Jackson and Buddy, Jessica James, Andrew Johnson, Sugi Jones, Helen Kazanoff, Francis Katz's family, Arthur Katz, Shanti and Kurt Latimer, Aunt Lori, Alyssa Luck, Carolyn and Granger Marley, Bobby Martin, Jamie Pandya, Jay Pandya, Lively Pasque, Catherine Paul, Mary Peterson, Aunt Polly, Sura Noel Quinlan and her family, Duncan Quinn, Richard Robson, Rubin family, Paula Sable, Dr. Albert Sands, Rosemary Cease, Jacob Smuckler, Mamie Stark, David Underwood, Claudia and Vic Williams, Suzanne Williams, Judith Wormser, Casey the Dog, Fabio the Dog, Ninjay the Cat, Skippy the Dog, Teddy the Dog, and Mikey the Dog. If you have any other names that you'd like to be remembered, please say them now.
Shirley Phillip.
Well, We'll begin with Shanti Deva's verses. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatari, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And then we do seven Tara mantras for Geshe Gelug's long life and health. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Ha. 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 And if you'll just indulge us for one moment, we have an announcement about our annual appeal from Donna Cease.
Good morning. Just want to let you know that the momentum is going very well. As you know, we already had $25,000 raised last week. And during this past week, we have raised an additional $8,230. So our total is $32,746 toward our goal of $108,000. And I also want to remind you, if you have never pledged before to the annual appeal of our wonderful matching fund, it will double your merit dollar for dollar. And it also doubles the merit of the person who has provided, those donors who provided that matching fund. We've had $400 worth of donations taking advantage of that. So there's another $4,600 out there to match your donations. Thank you.
Can I say one last thing? I know people have to go, but, you know, on my list today, the first thing on the list I forgot to say, for those people who are students of Buddhism, students of Geshe-la, I just wanted to pass on, because he won't say this, so I have to say it. I was going to talk today about the relationship of student to the teacher. That actually was the topic, and I think I forgot it. So, which is actually kind of one of my favorite topics, because that's also something that's a little bit misunderstood, I think, by us. It's not common. But I'd just like to say that those who are students, and I know you know that Geshe is a very special person, okay? But don't forget it. And even he manifests as a friend, right? That's his job, you know, as an awakening being. So whether what his attainments are, he's Buddha or not, I can't say that. But for us, when Buddha passed away, then he said, I will manifest through your teacher. So it doesn't necessarily mean he might get together, might be a Buddha, but what the point of it is that we're practicing and our guru is the Buddha, which means the awakened mind. The awakened being is our teacher, is our guide. We're not alone. And he will, as promised, I believe, my experience is that he will manifest through your teacher. So please regard that relationship as extremely special because it's the only one we have, right? We have all of us. We're just like, okay, let's have coffee together. And, you know, that's irritating Lori, right? Okay. But so I just wanted to guess, you know this, but if you forget, try to remember, because it doesn't matter. Any of your other practices really don't matter in that if you don't have that, if we don't have that, okay? So if you only have that, we can attain everything. That's what's amazing, okay? So I don't mean it to sound sort of very fantasy, but I think if it means anything to you, please try to remember, okay? Okay.
Good night. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, thank you.